I'm Jason Epperson. This is RV Miles, and it's time for our year-end RV and camping news roundup. Welcome back, everybody. Each year, at the end of the year, I like to go back through the entire year's stories and take a look at what the biggest RV and camping news stories were for this year. And this year, like each other year, was a big one. We covered a lot of stuff this year. So let's dive into my top stories of the year, of stuff that we covered. There's probably some other stories out there that I'm missing on here. And if I did, I'd love to hear about them in the comments. But I'm not going to sort of regurgitate these stories. What I want to do is briefly talk about what happened and sort of talk about where we are in the grand scope of things right now. First up, the year for the RV industry really kicks off at the Florida RV Super Show in Tampa every year. It's just around the corner. We actually interviewed Dave Kelly from the Florida RV Trade Association about the 2026 show, and we're going to be there. We hope to see you there. If you want to check out that interview, it's over on the RV Miles podcast, which is over on its own YouTube channel if you're checking this out on YouTube. At the Florida RV Super Show this year, of course, the Sabre 37 RV Miles, our collaboration with Forest River's Sabre Division, debuted, and we were so proud of it. But this also sort of became the year of the influencer RV. Nate and Marissa from Less Junk, More Journey had their collaboration with Grand Design that they showed off at the Hershey RV Show. Chris and Hillary of Fuel Your Wander have a Class A motorhome collaboration with American Eagle, and there have been several other ones as well. And you know, proud to be one of the first in on this, but I think this is sort of a trend that the RV manufacturers have found useful. Obviously, using influencers to help sell things is something that's become common across society, but I think it's something unique and interesting here within the RV industry. You know, a lot of us have said for years, we wish some of these RVs were designed more by people that actually use them. And while most of these floor plan designs are not, we're not reimagining the RV itself. We didn't set out to redesign how Sabre builds RVs. Nate and Marissa didn't set out to redesign how Grand Design builds RVs, but we're looking at the floor plan from an RVer's perspective. And I think that's been really interesting. And I think it's something that you will continue to see going forward. Also at the Florida RV Super Show in 2025, the Wingham Oasi debuted officially in the U.S. They started taking orders and people have started to receive them in the U.S. So this is an Italian motorhome company. It's a fairly old company. I got yelled at by somebody in the comments last week when I mentioned them. They're not new, but they are new to North America. And they're sort of like mini motorhomes that are really sort of jewel boxed. And all of the components are really well designed where they go in their own place. And if you're into small motorhomes, I think you'll really love them. As far as the RV industry itself goes, this has been another sort of difficult year. We had the big pandemic era boom from late 2020 into 2021 and 2022. And then in 2023, the cracks started to show and the bottom ended up dropping out by the end of the year. And RV sales have really declined quite significantly, down from 600,000 units built in 2021 down to about 350,000 being built each year. And that's been a significant change for the RV industry. But I do think that means some improvement for customers. It means some of the manufacturers are starting to have to compete with each other in a different way, in a way that they didn't have to during the height of the pandemic. Many of you might not remember, but just before the pandemic hit, the RV industry was actually on a bit of a decline as well. And what we were starting to see then was them starting to compete a bit on quality. Now, I'm not saying quality was greatly improved or anything like that for sure, but brands were starting to pay attention to the fact that customers were looking for improvements in quality. And back then you started to see social media posts about why we do our roof this way and it's better this way. You started to see manufacturers institute rain bays and PDIs at the factory level. A lot of RV brands didn't and still don't have pre-delivery inspections at the factory. They just expected the dealerships to do it all. You started to see manufacturers do a little bit of that in 2018 and 2019. And then a lot of that went away when the boom hit. And now that things have come down to earth, we're starting to see a bit more of that. And more on that in a moment when we talk about Grand Design and FrameFlex. This year saw Thor Industries dissolving its subsidiary Heartland RV and laying off several of its executives and moving Heartland underneath the Jayco brand. So Heartland still exists, but Heartlands are manufactured by Jayco now. Jayco was just performing better as a brand for Thor, both under sales and under quality. And what we saw a lot of this year was sort of the mid-range stuff, big fifth wheels that were in the cheaper categories, the stuff that's sort of mid-price, not the small travel trailers that are $15,000 or under, and not the super expensive high-end fifth wheels, but a lot of the towable stuff in that mid-range was not doing well. A lot of the cheaper stuff was selling better. A lot of the more expensive stuff was starting to gain ground. And I think that eventually really hurt Heartland. And Heartland was having lots of quality and sales issues on top of that. And the industry as a whole retracting, you were going to see somewhere, we knew, some manufacturers either closing up shop or consolidating. You can look at this sort of as a consolidation from one of the biggest brands. So probably with Heartland moving over to Jayco, probably less Jaycos were built as well. But we did see in September at the Hershey RV show sort of the relaunch of the new Heartland. And it will be interesting in the coming years to see what Heartland looks like as a Jayco brand. We also saw Thor take the Integra motor coach line and move all the diesel pushers under the Tiffin brand, which is a big deal because the Integras were built in Indiana and Tiffins are built in Alabama. So Integras are now built on the Tiffin line in Alabama, which again, there were probably fewer Tiffins sold. There were probably fewer Integras being sold. You combine those two lines together under one roof in Alabama, and that's going to allow you to keep the lights on. This episode is sponsored by Wholesale Warranties. It's no secret that the cost of RV repairs has gone up. And on January 1st, RV warranty rates go up too. From $60,000 engine repairs to $3,500 AC units, just one breakdown can ruin your travel budget. That's why thousands of RVers trust Wholesale Warranties. Their RV extended warranties cover those costly repairs, let you work with any licensed mechanic or mobile tech, and come with a customer advocacy team that makes claims simple. But here's the catch. Every January 1st, all RVs are considered one model year older, meaning pricing and eligibility for protection will change. Lock in your coverage at this year's rates, and you're covered for next year's rising repair costs. You can get a free personalized RV warranty quote today from Wholesale Warranties and hit the road with peace of mind in the new year. This year also saw Rev Group exit the trailer business. Rev Group had purchased Lance Campers a few years ago. Lance Campers are built out in California, and they've decided to let them go. And Lance Campers has gone back to being an independent brand on its own. Rev Group had tried to manufacture some in Indiana as well, and that has ended. So Lance Campers are famous for their truck campers, but they make great trailers as well. And they're all back in California as an independent brand again. Of course, the big story in 2024 was the whole Grand Design excessive frame flex issue, something that really came to head in 2024, but had been growing for years, where more and more customers were reporting problems with the frames of their Grand Design large fifth wheels flexing out of spec, meaning the walls were separating from the frame, or there were cracks in the frames, lag bolts were pulling out, pieces of furniture and staircases and things inside the RV weren't staying in place. Front doors and baggage doors were opening or hard to shut. That whole issue really came to a head in 2024 when Grand Design decided to extend their frame warranty to 5 years and make it transferable to other customers. Most RV warranties are not transferable. When you sell your RV to somebody else, their factory warranty is usually gone. And Grand Design took the step to make it transferable. But this year saw some legal action around Grand Design. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration opened up an investigation, and a class action lawsuit against Grand Design over this issue has been organized. And that's led Grand Design to make some changes. And you can be a never Grand Design person now, and that's fine. But Grand Design has made some changes. And whether those changes are effective or not, we'll see. But recently, Grand Design announced the Omega fifth wheel frame, a new robust frame that they say has been designed with Lippert, who manufactures most RV frames. And we've also seen Grand Design change their roofing material and more. They're really trying to put out there that they are a brand to be trusted and that they are a quality manufacturing brand. And you can disagree with that or not. But also on the big fifth wheel front, we saw the launch of Axiom RV. Axiom RV was created by some of those folks that were fired from Heartland RV, and they have some wild ideas. There's hardly any penetrations on the rooftop. Really, it's just your black and gray tank fence. And because of that, you'd think if you remove the air conditioners on the roof, okay, our RV's a little bit shorter. No, no, no. They just make it taller, going up near the legal maximum, so that the inside of the RV is very tall. Probably too tall in the main area of a fifth wheel, but there's plenty of headroom in that upper deck bedroom area. I think Axioms are really interesting, and they've got a lot of great ideas being put into these. I would love to see the next iterations. But I have to say, I don't love the idea of redesigning things about a large fifth wheel only to make it even larger. Let's see some of these innovations on a smaller fifth wheel and see how it goes. On a travel trailer, even. This year, we saw the introduction of two serious electric motorhomes from major RV manufacturers. From Integra, the Electric Embark, which is a electric motorhome with a fossil fuel range extender. It's a Class A motorhome. It's the first on the Harbinger chassis, the partnership that Thor Industries has with Harbinger Motors. And it'll be really interesting to see where it goes and if people end up buying it next year. We also saw the launch of the Arvex from Coachmen, a smaller all-electric motorhome based on the Chevy BrightDrop chassis. Unfortunately, very shortly after the announcement of the Arvex, Chevy decided to end production of the electric BrightDrop chassis. And that leads us to another big story this year. It's vehicle manufacturers pulling back from EVs. We saw Chevy dropping the BrightDrop van. Ford has dropped its electric Transit van chassis. We saw Ram pull back from its push for an electric Ram 1500. And we saw Ford end production of the Ford Lightning all-electric vehicle, only to announce that next year they will have a range-extended version. It'll be similar to the Ford F-150 Lightning, but again with a gas range extender. And I think it's really interesting to see this pullback. This is to be expected anytime any new technology comes out. And as an EV owner, I do like EVs. I love the way our EV drives. I'm also an owner of an F-350 diesel Super Duty. I've always been a bit flummoxed by the push towards making the biggest and largest electric vehicle. Until we perfect some of the smaller vehicles, it makes a whole lot more sense to have a compact car, a sedan, an electric vehicle at this point than it does some of the bigger, heavier stuff or anything that needs to tow, a motorhome that has to pull a lot of weight. I'm not seeing the benefit of that yet until battery capacity increases even more. And battery capacity increases every year. The cost of batteries comes down every year, and that will improve. But at this point, we're just not there yet. But somebody's got to make some of these things to try it out. Also on the technology front, we saw T-Mobile's integration with Starlink and then Apple's push towards satellite on cell phones. The ability to send a text message via satellite is now real for a heck of a lot of cellular customers out there. And that is life-saving technology for people that are out in the middle of nowhere, like many of us RVers tend to be sometimes, or hikers, or anybody who gets far away from civilization. Of course, the Trump administration came into office this year, and they certainly did guns a-blazing, and that affected a lot of things on public lands. I covered a lot of that over on the Parkography channel, where I cover national parks and public lands news. But on the camping front, there was a lot of concern that we would see some campgrounds closed, that we might see closures at a lot of federal facilities like national parks, and there certainly has been some up and downs on that front. Most of the actual closures we saw were in the southeast of Army Corps of Engineers campgrounds, and most of them have reopened back up. It was sort of temporary shortages of employees as some of these mass firings and mass layoffs and mass resignations happened. And we certainly have seen reductions in some visitor hours and maybe days of visitation at some of the smaller national park sites. But for the most part, everything has been ironed out a little bit at this point as far as access goes. Of course, the Trump administration has also instituted a whole lot of varying tariff policies that have gone up and down and all over the place. And the RV industry was generally expecting to be raising prices around 20%. We did see several carve-outs for things that affect the RV industry, which has allowed that to not happen quite as much, along with just market pressures on the RV industry. The fact that they're not selling as well as they were before has kept prices down. In addition, the RV industry actually learned a lot during the pandemic. One of the biggest problems during the pandemic, if you remember, was the lack of accessibility of parts and materials. RV industry really got caught with their pants down, not being able to order from their supplier, you know, outlet covers or air conditioners or window frames or baggage doors, whatever it might be. And right after that happened. We saw lots of RV manufacturers spend a lot of money on storage. A lot of money went into stocking up parts and materials so that if there was a problem like that again, they would be able to access those materials. And I do think that that problem solving did help them out a lot to weather some of the tariff issues. We saw a lot of RV manufacturers stock up on certain things before tariffs went into place. We saw a lot of RV manufacturers just sort of use the stuff they had on hand until tariffs got worked out in certain areas. But tariffs are certainly still a market pressure that continue to be a challenge for some manufacturers and for some buyers. And then, of course, October through early November, we had the federal shutdown. And the federal shutdown, surprisingly, did not affect public lands all too much. During the last federal shutdown, which happened during the previous Trump administration, we did see lots of damage and issues at national parks. And there was a lot of concern on the national park front during this shutdown because this shutdown happened closer to the busy tourist season. And we did see damage here and there. We saw graffiti at Arches National Park. We saw people taking advantage of and base jumping and not getting permits for hikes at places like Yosemite. But for the most part, it was better than expected. On the state park front, we saw lots of state parks raise their prices this year. Arizona, New Mexico, Oregon was a big one. We've talked about that many times over the course of this year, that Oregon state parks have been running in a budget deficit, and Oregon state parks are not funded by taxpayers. They're funded by the lottery, which lottery sales are way down, and they're funded by people showing up and paying to get in. They're funded by camping fees and all that sort of stuff. And we've seen several times this year, Oregon trying to find ways to raise prices, and they have. On the RV dealership front, we saw the virtual end to Lazy Days RV. This was really one of the biggest casualties of this downturn in RV sales. Lazy Days RV sort of had reduced, split off, sent assets off to different places, sold dealerships to Camping World and others. And now in the end, the Lazy Days name and the rest of their dealerships have been sold to Campers In RV. And Lazy Days has been delisted from the stock market, and Campers In will operate some dealerships under the Lazy Days name, but they're all Campers In dealerships now. Also, of course, towards the end of the year here, we saw the announcement of the exit of Marcus Lemonis from Camping World, the CEO of Camping World for 20 years or so. I don't want to get too much into that, as I've covered it extensively on a couple of videos here towards the end of the year. On the parts and components front, we saw the end of Norcold. Norcold Manufacturing went bankrupt. Norcold manufactured refrigerators for RVs and marine applications. And Norcold was a huge name in refrigeration when they manufactured absorption refrigerators, refrigerators that operated on propane, usually propane and electric. And unfortunately, with the move towards DC refrigerators, almost all RVs are sold with DC refrigerators now. For a while, everybody had the gas absorption refrigerators, and then we saw a big move towards residential 120-volt plug-into-the-wall refrigerators, just like you'd buy at Lowe's. And really quickly, over the past 3 years or so, we've seen almost complete overtaking of RV refrigeration by DC compressor fridges, which are great. They do take a decent amount of power, but nowhere near as much as a 120-volt residential refrigerator did. Sort of a compromise. They are significantly cheaper than the absorption refrigerators. And although Norcold did make DC compressor refrigerators, they just didn't have the market share anymore, and they had to lay everybody off, and they're going through the bankruptcy process at the moment. Of course, this year we also saw the Newmar VIN fiasco. A Canadian couple with a Newmar motorhome tried to cross into the States where they had intended to sell their Newmar motorhome when an inspector at the border was not happy with the absence of a VIN number, at least in locations where he thought they were supposed to be. Now, this is a case that has been, has had a lot of people on edge, a lot of people who are Newmar owners, Spartan chassis owners, concerned. And really what it turns out to be in the end is this inspector just didn't understand. Where Newmar's VINs are is what the law says. And you can argue that they shouldn't be on paper. They shouldn't be removable. People get in the comments at me about this word indelible that's in the law, that the VIN needs to be indelible. Motorhomes are not required to have vehicles of that size are not required to have the VIN number on the outside. That's the bottom line, is the VIN number is not on the exterior, and it's not required to be on the exterior. People say, well, that allows you to steal a motorhome and And you could, you know, you could fake the VIN number, put a fake one in. I think the idea here is that you can't, if you remove the VIN number, you know, it's a paper VIN number again on the inside. If you remove it, the way that is stuck on, you can't take that off and that label still be intact. So you can't move that to another unit. And that's how you're protecting another unit from being stolen. Regardless, none of that matters because the law is what the law is. And I've gone through this 100 times and I haven't figured out where Newmar has done anything wrong. I know we all think that the VIN number should be stamped on the chassis. It should be all over the place. It should be non-removable. It should be absolutely permanent. And that's just not what the law says. And I don't think Newmar was in the wrong here. And you might disagree with me, and that's okay. But I think that's really where this ended up. I don't think anybody that owns a Newmar should really have a concern over this. This doesn't seem to have been an issue at any point ever. Newmar has not changed the way they've done this. Lots of people have sold their RVs. Thousands and thousands of RVs get inspected all the time. Lots of states require an inspection in the state. When you sell an RV that was owned in one state and you're retitling it in a new state, lots of states require that RV gets inspected by an inspector, and this has not been a problem. So I don't consider it to be something that will remain a problem. And I really, there was a lot of fervor against Newmar over this. And I really don't think they did much wrong here. I think a lot of people are angry that they didn't help this couple out. And it seems to me like Newmar sort of exited the situation when the couple tried to cross the border a second time. And at that point, Newmar was like, we're not going to be a party to this. And it's hard not to understand that. So that's where I sit on that issue. Of course, after terrible flooding last fall in North Carolina and other places on the East Coast, then we dealt with terrible flooding this year in Texas, flooding that wiped out some campgrounds, lots of RV owners, lots of RVs, unfortunately, with people in them swept downstream. Really disastrous situation in Texas happening earlier this year. Right now, we're sort of in the midst of this terrible flooding in the state of Washington, and this continues to be a problem that we've seen over the last couple of years. And obviously weather is getting more extreme. Whether you believe in climate change or you believe this is natural, weather has been quite extreme over the past few years. And it's something that all RVers should be thinking about, having disaster plans and knowing what they're getting into in different weather situations in areas that they're not familiar with. I talk about this a lot on the podcast. If you head to states where you've never been before, in a climate that you've never been in before, there are things that you might not know about that you need to learn about. If you've never been to the Southwest, you need to know what a wash is and why you don't park in one. You need to know what a dust storm is. If you've never been to the middle of the country, you need to know how to deal with tornadoes, that sort of thing. It will only continue to be more and more important. And then finally, I just want to comment quickly on sort of the last big story of the year that has come out, this Battleborne battery issue. YouTuber Will Prowse broke down a Battleborne battery and talked about some of the issues that some people in his forums have been talking about, where a loose post has overheated. The positive post on the battery has overheated. And a lot of you have a lot of comments about this. A lot of you have sent me lots of things on this. I'm not an expert in this area, so I don't want to dive too much into that. And I think Will has done a decent job of that. However, I did say I reached out to Dragonfly Energy, the owners of Battleborne, to see if they had a comment and that I would let you know if I heard back, and I have not heard back. But in full transparency, I do want to say that there is a story that I missed over the Thanksgiving break. We took the week of Thanksgiving off, and I was going to cover this when I came back, but did not. I think it is unfair to me to have not covered this as we wrap up the year here, and I don't know where else to put it. But I should share that Battleborne has announced that it is expanding its lineup to include new inverter chargers, a fully redesigned mobile app, and they have a new series of batteries. It's called the Battleborne Base Series, delivering essential, straightforward lithium power designed for portable electronics, fish finders, stuff like that. Seems like drop-in sort of battery for use cases like that, that it don't involve heavy, heavy draws like you might have in an RV off an inverter. So I just thought it was important to share that is something that Battleborne is doing. And I didn't want to sound like I'm only reporting on the negative. So that's it for my roundup of the 2025 stories that mattered to me. I'd love to know your thoughts in the comments. What did I miss? What are your thoughts on some of these stories? And what are your predictions for 2026 in RVing and camping. Thanks so much for being here. Hit the like button if you like this video. Subscribe if you want more like it, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.